Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Let's be honest. The first place our family turns to when we're looking for a quick getaway is always Airbnb. I know we can find an amazing place to stay at the beach, like St. Simon's on the Georgia coast, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's one of our favorite spots. That's what comes to mind, Matt, when I'm thinking about travel. And while you're staying at someone else's home, have you ever thought about what you could be doing with your own home?
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you are away, because that is all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room if you've got one. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM. Let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are answering your listener questions.
That's right, buddy. We have a listener question Monday episode lined up for folks, and we've got five excellent questions that we're going to get to, including how to work with a partner who maybe isn't so great with money. And
but are you talking about me?
Oh, not a business partner, like a romantic partner.
Oh, okay.
Which you and I are not.
That's true.
How best to pay for tuition if you're looking at going back to school. And we've got a couple of questions, too, regarding inherited money, the best moves to make with that money. We'll get to both of those, plus one of those little bonus questions. Five questions total for this episode. Looking forward to it.
All right. Looking forward to it as well. And before we get to that, Matt, I just wanted to quickly mention that our family has two new members. We adopted a couple of kittens.
Congrats. You've got twins. didn't tell anybody about the pregnancy.
Right, right.
No.
So we got them for my daughter's birthday. My daughter just turned 8, my oldest daughter, and she's like really wanting to kind of take on some added responsibility and really wanted that to be in the form of a pet. And so that was kind of the direction we went in. We were like trying to figure out what kind of pet we were going to get.
It wasn't because of she didn't sit down and watch Cats, the movie, that abomination of a film.
That might have scared her away from wanting to get cats. I don't know.
You should have made her watch that before getting the cats and like, do you really want to, you know, get a couple kitties?
Well, we were looking at like guinea pigs, or should we get like a hamster, or should we even go all the way and get a dog? Cats just seem to make the most sense for us, at least for the time being. But I wanted to let people know that like where you get your cat matters. And so we did a good bit of research into that as well. And there's this place nearby where we live. I mean, it's out in the suburbs, about a 30-minute drive, called Good Mews. And
always like a good pun.
Cute name, right?
Pet adoption.
But this was a really cool shelter with a cool mission. And yeah, so it's a cage-free cat shelter. It's a no-kill shelter. And it's run by volunteers and it relies on donations from the public. So we thought like the mission behind it was cool. But then the pricing was incredibly cool too. So we were able to get two kittens plus, you know, quite a bit of initial supplies to help us get started. For $50.
Whoa.
And so, yeah, it was like, cool, we're supporting this cool shelter.
That's pretty
but at the
good.
Same time, like, we're not forking over almost any money, and we're helping, you know, these little kitties who need a home.
So you said that it's like a no-cage shelter, and I just picture just this giant, massive room with a bunch of nooks and crannies, and there's just cats everywhere.
So that's kind of what it is.
It's not like kind of like duking it out. It's like the kitty world.
So there's like one big room for the kitties, and then there's another big room for like adult cats. And but yeah, it's like
just to get out of the way of all the
it's free range,
all
man.
The youngins.
They're all over the place. So it's kind of like fun to experience that. But
well,
yeah, now my house smells like cat. I will say that.
Okay, so I was over there. It actually doesn't smell like cat, and I feel like I tend to be a little more sensitive. But I kind of, yeah, they're sweet. Got to know Nina and Birdie when I was over there for the date night swap, when I was kind of keeping your house, holding on the fort while you and Emily were out on a date. But I'm kind of surprised. I mean, so obviously you didn't pay a whole lot of money up front for these cats. But the, I mean, there are going to be ongoing costs.
Yep.
And I was over there too, because when y'all came home from your date before I left, Emily like cracked the can of one of these wet cat foods that smelled wonderful. But there's some ongoing costs.
That might be the worst scent associated. Yeah. Yeah.
But the ongoing costs as well is definitely something to keep in mind. And obviously, money alone shouldn't be the only reason that you say no to a pet, right? If one of our kids said, hey, this is something we're interested in, it would probably most definitely be cheap if you're only looking at the costs and not the additional things that a pet would bring to your household.
Yeah, having a pet can be a rewarding experience.
Yeah, but I guess I just know that you tend to definitely be a cheap guy. I don't know. Sometimes I think you're more cheap than I am, but then there's other times when I realize maybe I'm the cheap guy.
Yeah. You might be. Yeah, you really might be out of the two of us. Yeah, I'm excited for my kids, and it's been fun to have them already, even though, like, in a perfect world, we wouldn't have any pets. Yeah, that's just kind
in
of...
In a perfect financial world.
Well, financial world, and honestly, like, I don't know, like, I would love to get a dog at some point, but I don't know, it felt like cats made the most sense for us now, and they have grown on me already, so
nice.
It's kind of fun, and I just wanted to, like, throw that out there. Make sure you put in the research and find out, like, where's the best place near you to get a cat, to adopt a cat, or any animal, really, that you're looking to get, because I don't know, there's some people, Matt, that some of our neighbors who spend thousands of dollars on an animal.
Look at those designer kitties.
They drive hours away in order to pick up that puppy or whatever. And there's just other ways to get a cat and to like really help a cat out at the same time.
Most definitely. Yeah, let's introduce the beer that we're going to enjoy on this episode. You and I are both drinking a Coco Frio, and this is by a brewery out of Chicago called Cruz Blanca. This one, as well as a few others, were donated to the show by Dennis. I'm looking forward to enjoying this one and getting to our thoughts on this beer at the end of the episode.
Very nice. All right, well, let's move on to the topic at hand, Matt. We're answering listener questions on today's episode. And if you have a question you want to Matt and I to tackle on an upcoming Ask HTM episode, just go to howtomoney.com/ask. There are simple directions there for you to record a voice memo, send it our way, and hopefully we can take that, your question, on next week's episode. So yeah, Matt, let's get to that first question. This one is about what it looks like to be in a partnership with somebody who really isn't very good with money.
Joel and Matt, this is Gina from New York. I'm in a hopefully long-term relationship. We have drastically different attitudes towards money, however. I save and invest a lot, and he spends. Since marriage combines financial aspects of two people, is the spender-saver difference enough of a reason to not tie the knot? We have also discussed wills, and I've read about durable powers of attorney, living trusts, and beneficiaries. We will keep separate bank accounts whether or not we marry. We both work, rent together, and share household expenses. He has kids, but we will not. I'm aware that money can be a source of discontent for couples and want to avoid that. We've managed to skirt conflict so far by agreeing to disagree. As a daily bicycle commuter, my worst-case scenario is getting hit and having my money go to my parents, who have achieved FIRE, or my sister, who earns plenty of money. Your advice, please.
Gina, it's always great to hear from another bike enthusiast, bike commuter out there. And yeah, it would be pretty bad news if you were to get hit. Definitely make yourself visible, whether that's with reflectors or bike lights. I actually want to make sure I get some bike lights on all of our kids' bikes, because they don't ride without us. But even still, I want to make sure that we're this entire fleet of blinking red lights, that, you know, when there's cars coming up behind
us. Hyper-visible.
Seriously, yeah, yeah. But Gina, yeah, you're talking about relationships. And man, isn't it true that opposites attract? That's definitely the case for you, from what it sounds like. And that's totally okay. But what leads to marriage difficulty is when you aren't able to recognize that, or, you know, you aren't able to communicate communicate effectively about your differences. And so we would encourage you to talk about money, work towards more of a common understanding now before you have more difficulties that might arise in the future. You just want to make sure that you're getting on the same page as much as possible before tying the knot. And you know, you don't have to be perfectly aligned. You just have to be able to communicate effectively so that you both understand, you both respect each other. It is okay to want to do things differently. In all relationships, there's always going to be more of a spender, more of a saver typically. You're going to have different personality types, and that's totally fine, but we want to make sure that you both are working towards a similar goal.
Yeah, that communication aspect is crucial, because even if you handle things differently or maybe even disagree about things, as long as you can communicate well about them, as long as the lines of communication are open, you feel seen and heard, that's a huge part of the equation, right?
Yeah. She said that they've so far gotten by just agreeing to disagree.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And you can easily do that too when it comes to smaller things, right? Like the color of a bedroom. But if you're agreeing to disagree about some of these larger things, I think that's when it could really turn into a big problem.
Yeah. So I think one of the things Gina's asking about is also like whether these differences are big enough to keep someone from getting married. And I feel like that just kind of depends, right? It depends on if these differences are because of even deeper issues than just money, or if the differences in how you view money are that distinct, if they're wildly opposite. So we don't want to sound like marriage counselors, because we're definitely not that. Mm-hmm. But in our experience, problems or disagreements with money specifically are really just the symptom of some other differences in your lives, right? So, Gene, if I was in your shoes, I would focus less on the money, and I would start to ask more questions that focus on the goals that the two of you share, because money is often the funding source for those goals. By getting on the same page for some of these bigger life goals, that should help to inform the actions and the decisions that you're making as a couple in the day-to-day. But it's so often the case that starting the conversation from the standpoint of what your goals are as a couple together can kick off a conversation about money that feels less threatening, because you actually started by talking about something that's more core and crucial to who you both are together, as opposed to starting on the negative note, which is like how much you disagree about money.
Yeah.
You're starting to dream together, which does make a big difference in like how that conversation comes about and is perceived.
Exactly. Yeah, because if you can identify a goal that you have both said that this is important, this is something I want to achieve, you can agree to that and say there's a month goes by, and then maybe say he does something crazy with his money, something that he might deem irresponsible. Then you have an established groundwork, and I think there's a more healthy discussion that could come from that, where you'd say, hey, how does this actually get us close to that large goal?
You can point back to that prior conversation and say, listen, we were on the same page here, but then, you know,
past week,
they're saying something different.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%, man. Now let's kind of get to some more of the nuts and bolts when it comes to protecting your assets in the here and now. The only way to ensure that the assets you currently possess, that they won't be at risk if the marriage doesn't work out, is to have a prenup. We're not huge fans of those, because the idea of marriage is that you love and you trust someone enough to combine everything with them, but they are becoming a little more commonplace these days. A prenup can protect your assets, but it can also hurt your relationship if you don't approach it well, if you don't have good communication ahead of time.
Right, it's like, you spring it on somebody last minute, and you're like, wait a second, you don't trust me? Like, what in the world is this?
Exactly, yeah.
And we're not married.
You know? That can be, again, just a symptom of a deeper issue.
Sure.
That's why it's important to kind of have some of those deeper conversations first. Your partner actually might be hurt if it's even considered, even if it's brought up. And so, consider your approach and make sure that you talk about it, you know, with care and consideration in order to avoid those fights as well as those potential hurt feelings.
Yeah, I think there are some other ways too that Gina can protect herself as the person who is better with money, who has been saving and investing for a while. She has been taking really important steps to make sure that she is going to be financially independent someday. So, Gina, I would say, dual accounts is another step that you're going to want to take, in particular in this relationship. You know, having one account where you put money every month for shared expenses is something that most couples do, and it's helpful. But then you're going to want to keep another separate account for each of you. I think that'll help give you both peace of mind. And I don't think that this is necessary for every couple, but in particular, if you have, you're finding that there is this big of a gap between how you both handle money, it's crucial for you to have your own account in your name that's separate. And it's also crucial to have retirement accounts in your name as well. It sounds like you're already doing that, but you definitely want to continue to prioritize that, having retirement money that's in your name specifically.
Yeah. And Gina, you also asked about making sure that he gets any money in your name if you were to pass away prematurely. It sounded like that was sort of your worst case scenario, the fact that you might have family members who would receive that money when they don't necessarily need it. And I think that's really thoughtful to make sure that your partner there would be receiving some of that money. And so if you want to do that, you just need to make sure that he is listed as the beneficiary on all of your accounts. And that you create a will together. You know, you don't necessarily need to see a lawyer to do that. Free Will is a great site for straightforward will creation. We'll link to that in our show notes. But, you know, since he has kids from a previous relationship, it actually might be best for you to have a lawyer that specializes in wills, estates, and trusts to help you with that. But the best part about naming a beneficiary to your investments is the fact that you don't have to get married in order to make sure that he is financially taken care of were you to pass. Marriage can be something that you work towards as you kind of are figuring out what your relationship is going to look like. But in the meantime, you can kind of have some peace of mind knowing that that financial aspect of things is going to be taken care of. And yeah, again, you don't have to be married in order for that to happen.
Yeah, it's really not that difficult to change up your beneficiary. You just got to go into the back end of your account and, you know, and add him as your primary beneficiary. And that should alleviate some of your worst case scenario concerns rather quickly. But yeah, Gina, best of luck as you move forward into marriage. I hope y'all are able to sort some of this stuff out as a couple. Those conversations can be tricky, but yeah, having those conversations and communicating about it and not just sweeping that stuff under the rug is crucial to be able to move forward well as a couple when it comes to money. All right, Matt, we've got more questions to get to, including a question about how to pay tuition. We'll get to that and more right after this break.
Joel, so we were just recounting our trip to Scotland. This is the trip that we took this time last year, actually, with some of our friends over the weekend. And one of the highlights from Edinburgh was stumbling upon the absolute best meat pie shop. Mm-hmm. They were fresh out of the oven. They had that perfectly flaky crust. But guess what? That serendipitous experience would never have happened if we'd stayed at a boring hotel. We had found the perfect flat in the coolest part of town, thanks to Airbnb.
Ah, Matt, I'm still dreaming about those meat pies. You're making me drool. And while turning to Airbnb might be a no-brainer when you're looking to spend some money on travel, it might not be the first thing you think of when you're looking to make some money. Why let it sit empty, your house, when it could be earning extra income, though? It's the financially smart thing to do. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra dough.
Yeah, that's right. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
Matt, I love hearing from How to Money listeners who are pumped about a major accomplishment, right? Paying off debt, maxing out a retirement account contribution, or paying cash for a car. Like, those are all killer achievements. Those ecstatic emails, they get me stoked. And maybe a little less flashy, but still a crucial accomplishment, is creating a will. And Trusted Will rocks for that task. The things that people build their futures around are things worth protecting. Making an estate plan now means gaining security of your assets and peace of mind for you and your loved ones.
That's right. And with Trust and Will, you can create and manage a custom estate plan starting at just $199. Go to trustandwill.com/howtomoney for 10% off plus free document shipping. Keep your family prepared and protected by managing your will or trust online. And each will or trust is state-specific and customized to your needs.
Secure your assets and protect your loved ones with Trust and Will. Get 10% off plus free shipping of your estate plan documents by visiting trustandwill.com/howtomoney. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/howtomoney.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we are back, and this next question is from Tony. And Joel, he's actually got a question. He's in a similar position that you are in when it comes to the best way to pay for higher education for his spouse. Let's hear it.
Hey, Matt and Joel. I hope you're both doing well. I was hoping to get some financial advice on how to handle tuition costs. My wife is currently starting a graduate program that will run about 2 years in total. We are able to comfortably pay for the first year of tuition, but paying for the second year would cause our savings to go below our 6 months of expenses total, which I've heard is not a smart decision to make. In order to pay for the second year of tuition, we could either take out a student loan of roughly $10,000, or we could dip into an investment account that has more than enough to cover the second year of tuition. However, we were hoping to save this investment account for a down payment on a house in the future as we currently rent, but at the same time, I would prefer to avoid taking out a student loan to avoid the interest payments. Overall, I think the three options to pay for the second year would be to use our savings, dip into our investment account, or take out a student loan. Are any of these options preferable to the others? And if the student loan is more preferable, do you have any recommendations on good student loan options? If you're ever in Milwaukee, you should check out Eagle Park Brewing, as they have some great options I think you both would enjoy. Thank you both for any advice you may have on the situation, and keep up the great work on the podcast.
So real quick, before we get into the question, Joel, Eagle Park Brewing, I looked it up, and it's actually a pretty solid brewery. Not surprisingly, they have a lot of IPAs, so of course that caught my eye.
All right, we'll have to try that out. I've never had any beers by them before.
No, yeah, we haven't.
Yeah. All right, well, yeah, let's get into Tony's question. And Matt, you're right. I'm in a similar situation right now where my wife, she's going back to school to become a licensed therapist. It's going to take a few years. It's going to cost a decent chunk of change. And I like Tony's idea of trying to avoid student loan debt and graduate student loan debt in particular, right? Because graduate loans come with a higher interest rate, especially now after that bump
yes.
in July.
Yeah.
We're talking about an interest rate close to 5.5%. So any way that you can avoid that, or not any way, I guess there are some ways that you can avoid that would be bad, like stealing from someone
all
to avoid
all the legal
it.
ways that you can avoid paying that, we would encourage.
Yeah. So, but it's just, it's important to note that it's not ideal to take on a graduate student loan right now. So when it comes to where you're going to take that money from, we would rather see you dip into more of your savings, even though it means going below that 6 month threshold.
Yes.
Right. And one important thing for you to consider before you do that, though, is how secure you feel with your employment. Like if you're like, things are rocky and they've been laying some people off around me and I feel like I'm next, well, then dipping below that 6 month threshold isn't ideal. But if you've been there quite a while and the likelihood of losing your job is minimal, then we would say that's the spot to grab money from, is a place where you're literally earning next to nothing and being able to avoid taking on loans at that higher interest rate.
Yeah, that's right. There's a significant interest rate disparity between what you're earning on your savings and what you would be shelling out with those graduate loans. And Tony, one other thing that you could do to trim the cost is to put money in a 529 plan. streamline things a little bit here, right? We believe you live in Wisconsin based on your email. And so,
based on the brewery recommendation.
Yeah. So it would be ideal if you could contribute to a 529 plan in your wife's name in order to be able to not have to pay state income tax on some of those dollars. However, don't get crazy by investing that money since you'll need it in order to pay the tuition bill in short order. But at least you'll get to minimize what you owe in state taxes for the money that you contribute.
Yeah, that's one of the steps that my wife and I are taking. We are putting money in her name in a 529 plan. It's not something we necessarily planned for. I won't say that her idea to go to school came out of left field or anything, but it wasn't something we were planning for. We probably should have done better talking about that, planning for it in advance, so we could have been investing money to pay for this education. But since we didn't do that, the next best thing is at least to get that state tax break on that money.
Yes.
When we know we're going to be spending it on tuition no matter what, right?
Exactly.
And also that 529 money can count towards supplies. So let's say your wife needs a new laptop for that education. You get the tax break on that money as well. And don't forget as well, Tony, to look hard for scholarships that could cut down on the cost of school. It's worth the time and the effort, right? Because even just nabbing two or three scholarships can cut down on the costs, allowing you to keep more of your savings where it is. And since you'll be tapping some of that savings to pay for the cost of school, make sure you prioritize building that up quickly over maybe some of the other financial goals that you've had for a little while. So maybe instead of contributing more to that investment account that you mentioned, stop for a small period of time while you're building back up that savings buffer. And then you can resume it once you hit that, 6 month mark again.
Yeah, and another behavioral reason to avoid taking the easy path and signing up for student loans is that you're probably less likely to put in the hard work to find those scholarships were you to get a loan. I think it's easier to think like, okay, we've got school paid for, now let's just move on with life, as opposed to essentially kind of feeling the pain of having to dip into your emergency fund a little bit.
Yeah, you're kind of like, how can I dip in as little as possible? It actually, I would say, encourages you and goads you into searching for scholarships, a little more.
Yeah, when you start skimming off the top a little bit of your savings and you see it decrease, I think that could just be the motivation that you need in order to find ways to reduce the cost of school, or even to find ways to increase your income as a couple. Necessity is always the mother of invention.
Yeah.
But if you hit the easy button and you get the loan, well, necessity is no longer there because you've got this pool of money that you can draw on, and we want you to feel that pain a little bit. It's sort of like with budgeting. I mean, one of the reasons I track all of our expenses is so that I can feel every single one of those expenses to a certain extent, and just to have my mind wrapped around what it is our family is spending. And Tony, we think that mindset could also allow you to see money appear in ways that maybe you had no way of thinking that it could appear, or finding ways to reduce the cost of school when before you thought that there were no options for you.
And talk to the admissions department to see, are there any scholarship opportunities that I'm missing? There are websites out there where you can go search for scholarships. But sometimes talking to the admissions department is going to get you, especially in grad school, is going to help you find out about scholarship opportunities you might not have known about. I know we found out about some really incredible scholarship opportunities from the admissions department at the school that my wife is attending. And those are ones that we would not have found out about on some of the major websites. So it's definitely worth asking the question, sending that email, making that phone call, because there might be some impressive scholarships that are available that could save you a whole lot of money.
All right, Tony, well, we wish you and your wife the best of luck. Joel, let's get to our next question. We have one here from a listener who's looking to find ways to maximize self-employment benefits.
Hey, guys. My name's Eric. I'm from Eugene, Oregon. Started listening to the show thanks to Joel's time as a producer of another podcast and finding out that way. So I am really blessed to own a business that continues to grow, even though my role in the company is diminishing. It pays all of our household bills and maxes out my wife and I's Roth IRAs and simple IRAs. We began flipping homes as of February this year, and I have three under contract already. We're going to list two of them at the end of the month, and I'm starting to realize the legitimacy of this business as well. Can I start a solo 401k or SEP IRA and contribute the maximum contributions for both my wife and I? I have read that you can have two different retirement accounts as an employee, but I can't seem to find information if that applies to employers as well. On a separate note, can I have my business each pay $5,250 towards our student loans, thanks to the CARES Act? Thank you guys for your advice.
Eric, thanks so much for listening. And yeah, you mentioned the podcast I used to work on. That was the Clark Howard Show. We had Clark on recently.
Yeah.
Super fun interview to have, like, literally the guy that taught me so many of the things I know and care about when it comes to money.
He taught you everything that I haven't taught you.
Exactly. So most of it, really. But yeah, so it was fun to have him on the show. That was episode, I think, 391, if anyone wants to go back and take a listen. But I'm also, yeah, I got to say, pumped to be doing How to Money full time now. And let's get to your question. It sounds like owning a business has been really good for you, Eric, and being able to still generate a solid income while also being able to spend less time doing so. I mean, that's pretty excellent. That's the best of both worlds.
Sounds real nice.
That's what people want, right? It's like to make a good living without having to work 50 hours a week. But let's specifically talk about house flipping for a second. It can definitely be a legitimate business. Matt, we haven't talked about this much on the show, but you actually flipped a house at one point in time.
Yeah.
We're mostly buy and hold, long-term mom and pop real estate investors, but you did actually flip a house and you did well with it. But it's also a whole lot more risky, right? And you would readily admit that too.
Sure.
So yeah, we really do encourage folks who are engaged in riskier ways of making money, such as flipping a house, to have extra cash on hand, to have more cash than we would normally recommend to an individual, right? You know, market turns in real estate can either be a huge boost to your profitability, or it could leave you with a home or three, potentially in your case, Eric, on hand that are hard to sell unless you're willing to take a loss. So yeah, you just have to tread lightly. You have to be careful when you're flipping real estate because it can leave you in a precarious position.
That's right. And let's get to the part of your question, Eric, where you're asking about maybe setting up a solo 401k or a SEP IRA. We're actually pretty huge fans of specifically the solo 401k, also known as the self-employed or SE 401k. Joel and I, we actually have one of those set up here for, you know, with our company, with How to Money. But whether or not you can set one of those up with your house flipping business, unfortunately, you can't based on what you're saying. It sounds like that you're owner of both businesses. So if that's the case and you own 80% or more, then these businesses are considered to be in a brother-sister controlled group, according to the IRS, and they won't allow you to essentially double up your retirement contributions. There are some instances, however, where an individual could sock away the maximum allowable $58,000 with both companies. Yeah, you heard me right. $116,000 potentially set aside towards retirement.
That would be a whole lot of retirement investing in one fell swoop.
Not many people have the opportunity to do that.
Or the income to do that either, right?
Yeah. But if you did want to do something like that, the companies that you were employed by would need to be completely unrelated employers. And so sometimes you actually see this with doctors who are paid by two separate hospitals. There's actually a great article over at the White Coat Investor that we'll link to in our show notes if you want to do some more reading. But Eric, for you specifically, there's a lot of potential money on the line here, and we would encourage you definitely to consult a tax professional. There are a lot of aspects of personal finance that we believe you can completely 100% DIY it. Paying a tax professional is one area that Joel and I gladly pay for the latest, most up-to-date information, someone who understands all the different loopholes, all the things, all the T's that you got to cross, all the I's you need to dot. And so while it doesn't sound like that this is something you can participate in, we would encourage you to do your own due diligence and seek out a professional.
Yeah, I think it would be, you know, cheap, not frugal to try to completely do this on your own and
that
to not,
true.
You know, get somebody who is specialized and has a ton of tax knowledge to help you out in your specific situation. You know, and your last question too was about having the business, one of the businesses that you own, pay down some of your student loans for you. And that was actually, you know, something included in the CARES Act. And it's pretty cool because employers are actually allowed to contribute $5,250 in tax-free money towards the student loans of an employee each year. And that money can actually be paid directly to the employee. It doesn't have to go directly to the student loan servicing company in order to qualify for that tax break. Although it's important to note, employers that want to participate in this must have a written educational assistance program in place documenting how that company is handling these payments to employees. So yeah, you got to be buttoned up on this.
More admin work than maybe you're hoping for, but it's still something that you can participate in. And it doesn't have to be fancy either. I mean, that's something that we learned. I mean, kind of going back to the self-employed 401ks or the solo 401ks, you have to basically outline the terms of the plan But it sounds super fancy, but in reality, it's just kind of like the name of the plan, how it's going to work. As long as it's documented, that's what the IRS wants to see.
Yeah, you want to have that document prepared in order to take full advantage of that benefit. But yeah, it's also important to note this benefit is available through 2025. So yeah, that's $5,250 like each year, you know, for the next 4 years. So for folks who work for somebody else, if you work for a traditional employer, and that employer isn't participating in this program, if they're not offering to pay down your student loans via this benefit, that this provision in the CARES Act, we would suggest reaching out to HR because maybe it's not on their radar. But that is a benefit that more and more employers are offering, in particular because of this specific provision. And it's something that, yeah, you're going to want to put on their radar if it's not right now, because it could help you out and some of your fellow employees too.
All right. Well, Eric, congrats on being a successful serial entrepreneur, and we hope that this gets you pointed in the right direction. Joel, we've got a couple more questions that we're going to get to. Both of them actually have to do with inherited money, but what to do with that money, that's specifically what we're going to get to, and we'll get to both of those questions right after this break. Joel, so we were just recounting our trip to Scotland. This is the trip that we took this time last year, actually, with some of our friends over the weekend, and one of the highlights from Edinburgh was stumbling upon the absolute best meat pie shop. Mm-hmm. They were fresh out of the oven. They had that perfectly flaky crust. But guess what? That serendipitous experience would never have happened if we'd stayed at a boring hotel. We had found the perfect flat in the coolest part of town, thanks to Airbnb.
Ah, oh, Matt, I'm still dreaming about those meat pies. You're making me drool. And while turning to Airbnb might be a no-brainer when you're looking to spend some money on travel, it might not be the first thing you think of when you're looking to make some money. Why let it sit empty, your house, when it could be earning extra income, though? It's the financially smart thing to do. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra dough.
Yeah, that's right. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Did you know that money issues are a leading cause of divorce? Monarch, the top-rated personal finance app, also has built-in collaboration features so that you can invite your partner at no extra cost. Together, you can see all your finances, you can collaborate on your budget, and you can get insights into your cash flow and recurring transactions. Emily and I, we've been using Monarch together. It's been a great way to get on the same page with money together. We're able to log in and see our real-time financial stats whenever we want, including a current net worth number, which is a great way to track overall progress.
That's a ton of fun too. Yeah, Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app, and it gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards financial goals, and collaborate with your partner, like Joel just mentioned. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com slash how to money. Unlike other personal finance apps out there, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to set up and to get budgeting. And it's really customizable as well. I'm a big fan of being able to set up automatic rules for different transactions.
After trying out Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial. All right, we're back. We have two different inheritance questions that we're going to tackle in this last segment of our Ask HTM episode. But this first one is about what to do with an IRA that you inherit from someone.
Hey, Joel and Matt. My name's Nick. I'm 29. I live in Denver, Colorado. My question is this. I recently had a family member pass, and I inherited about $11,000 in a beneficiary IRA. My girlfriend and I are looking to buy a house in about 2 years, so we're trying to do everything we can to save for a down payment. I know that I need to start taking required minimum distributions from the IRA, and I'm wondering what the best use of that money is after it's been taken out, in light of our 2-year goal to save for a house and to avoid any additional tax liability. Thanks again. Any guidance you have is much appreciated. Huge fan of the show, and I hope to hear back from you soon. Thanks.
All right, Nick. First of all, we are sorry to hear about the passing of a family member, but we're going to go ahead and kind of dive into your question here. Since your goal is to buy a home in the next couple of years, I would be more likely to take all of that money from the IRA that you've inherited out of that IRA here all at once. You can also take half of the money out now and maybe half out next year. But part of the way that you would want to think about this is determining whether the IRA money is going to increase your tax bracket or not. If it's a Roth IRA that was opened more than 5 years ago, those withdrawals won't affect your taxes. But if it's a traditional IRA, it will. And so if you're at the upper limit of a tax bracket right now, taking all that traditional IRA money this year, that would cause more taxation on those funds. And so splitting that withdrawal out over 2 years or, you know, maybe even longer, say you don't get to buying that house maybe for maybe 3 years, that could be even more beneficial. But spreading it out to limit your tax liability is what you want to keep in mind.
Yeah. And where you fall within that tax bracket range, Matt, is really the biggest consideration that mm-hmm. you have to make there, as you know, for the number of years that you want to make those withdrawals over, because like Nick said, he wants to minimize his tax liability on this inheritance, which makes sense. Just make sure you know where you fall AGI wise in those tax brackets to see if taking it all at once is going to have a negative impact in that regard or not. By the way, the Secure Act changed some important things when it comes to inheriting an IRA, and this doesn't necessarily apply to Nick, but we felt like we should mention it anyway. But because of the dollar amount of the inheritance and his desire to use that money in the near future in order to buy a home, these rules, although they still apply to him, they don't really have much bearing on his situation, but there is now a 10-year rule that applies to an IRA that's inherited. Basically, instead of taking smaller distributions from that inherited IRA over your entire lifetime, what was known as the stretch IRA, which was really advantageous to especially someone who's younger inheriting one, well, you now have to withdraw the entire amount of that IRA within 10 years of the death of the person that you inherited that IRA from. But the one benefit of the 10-year rule is that there are no RMDs, right? You could let that money continue to grow and take all of it out just before you reach that 10-year deadline. But we would say this, if you inherit a big IRA with large sums of money, more than $11,000, right? Let's say it's just a hefty sum and you're not sure how to structure those withdrawals, it might be worth creating a withdrawal strategy with a financial advisor, because there is so much nuance and there's so much at stake here when it comes to your personal tax rate and when you make those withdrawals, and making sure that you do it in the way to kind of minimize the amount that is going to be siphoned away due to taxes.
That's right. And, you know, about what to do with that money in the meantime, you know, once all that money is out of the IRA, the best place to keep it is in savings. You could put some of that money, specifically up to $10,000, into Series I savings bonds, as long as you can commit to keeping that money there for at least 1 year. But it wouldn't be wise to get any riskier with that money that you're going to need within the next couple of years. You know, and just having some of that money, that $10,000 there in the I bonds, will help ensure that inflation doesn't eat your money's lunch in the short term, because that's the real battle with short term money. You know you want to keep it on hand. You know you want to keep it fluid in order to purchase this home. But it always feels bad keeping that money liquid in your savings account, earning like 0.5% is piddly. But in order to have options and in order for that money to be ready, you know, ready at the go in case you come across a property, maybe sooner than you realized, you don't want to have that money in volatile assets that could have lost value in the meantime.
Yeah, Matt, what you just said made me think that inflation is kind of like a middle school bully who's trying to steal your lunch. And it kind of is, right? It's trying to steal your savings, and it will over time. So long-term money, having that in savings, is a bad idea. Like, your only way to combat that inflation, to combat that bully, is to be investing. But yeah, when you need that money in the short term, that bully's going to get, yeah, I don't know, a few bites of whatever you brought to school that day. And in Nick's case, I mean, he's going to lose a little bit of that money to inflation. But because he needs it in the relatively near future, there's just not much else he can do.
That's the difference between him like snagging a couple tots off of your tray as opposed to him like swiping all of your lunch money.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. All right, let's get to the next question. This one also is about an inheritance, but this one's about, should you buy a rental property with that inheritance? Let's get to that one now.
Hi, my name is Jenny. I don't think I'm your typical listener. My husband and I have been full-time, unpaid volunteers for 23 years in Central America. We receive a small allowance for our basic needs. Your shows have helped me with ideas on how to use our small allowance wisely. Thanks for that. My husband is 60 and I'm 50. We have no debt, also no significant savings until now. My in-laws recently passed away in Europe, which is where we are temporarily due to COVID. They left my husband some money and a house. We plan on renting out the house and also establishing our emergency fund. But we don't know what the best thing is to do with the rest of the money. We wanted to buy a second rental property, but prices right now are sky high and we can't compete with the bidding wars. From your shows, I've learned that long-term investing isn't right for us at this age. Plus, we'd like to have the money handy in case the property market settles down a bit in the less popular winter months and we can afford something then. Is our thought process headed in the right direction, or should we be looking into something else? Thanks, guys.
All right, Jenny, thanks so much for your question, and we appreciate you reaching out because it can be tricky when you receive maybe a larger sum of money like this out of the blue when you didn't necessarily have a plan for it. And so, again, another situation where someone's lost a family member, and yeah, that's the bad news, right? We are sorry for your loss. Specifically for you and your husband, it's tough to lose both of your in-laws in such a short time span. And so we wish you both the best as you grieve and as you move forward. The good news, though, is you don't have any debt. You've done a great job with your personal finances, and that means that you can put all of this money to work for you and to help build up those savings for your future retirement. I'm just so glad that you've prioritized living with no debt, and that certainly makes a huge difference with the options that you have when you receive a big inheritance like this.
Yeah, it's nice to have options, right? Jenny and her husband, they have given themselves options by not allowing debt into their lives. And so, yeah, where should you put that money? That is a good question, Jenny. You know, our recommendation for you right now is, one, to not be afraid to keep that money in savings. You know, while you're figuring out what your plans are going to be moving forward, having that money, you know, in a savings account, even though we just talked about that middle school bully, which is inflation right now, pushing some of that money around, making it less valuable over time, it's still an important place to be able to park it for the time being. And yeah, we're not sure if you're still in Europe right now, if you're back in Central America. My guess is with the Delta variant, you might still be stuck in Europe. Yeah. But we'll see. But it sounds like there might be a lot up in the air regarding what life looks like in the future for you guys. And you said that you're planning to rent that house out in Europe. That's great. But before you start making plans to purchase an additional property, which it sounds like you're already kind of going down that path, maybe wait and see if you enjoy being a landlord, like if it works out for you. Because yeah, being an out-of-state landlord can be tricky as it is. We talked about that on the show. It's harder to manage a property from afar. But I'm guessing that being out of the country altogether, being
out
on another continent.
So yeah, landlording.
Completely across, yeah. You know, the sea. Well, that can throw another wrench into things too. So assuming you have good management in place and things do go smoothly, then that money that you've stored in savings will be ready for additional potential properties, I would say, when the time is right.
Yeah. And Jenny, I do love the idea that you're thinking towards using that money for additional properties and not maybe some fantastic vacation. It sounds like maybe y'all do enough travel and being abroad as it is, so maybe that's not a temptation for y'all. But I like the idea that you're thinking about putting this money towards other income generating assets. And so specifically a second rental property is where your head's at. If that's your goal, I think then investing that money while you're actively looking is definitely a bad idea. You don't want to lose any of the capital that you're planning to use for a down payment. Also, I wouldn't assume that there aren't any deals to be had right now. You mentioned that. It's certainly harder to find a deal in today's market, but just make sure that you use this time to do the research about maybe where you're hoping to buy another property. You want to focus on just a handful of areas and find out which specific location is likely to get you the best ROI. And so by looking every day for a couple of months, like you're going to be bound to develop insights about what's a deal, what's not a deal. We talked about what makes a good rental property way back in the day, back in episode 27. We talked more recently about managing effectively in episode 269. But also be sure to check out this coming Wednesday's episode in 2 days, where we're going to actually do a deep dive on real estate investing. We're going to kind of dive more into the nuances of what you need to keep in mind for, I would say, more traditional landlording. Jenny, for you, I feel that the chances of you actively managing this property might be pretty slim, but for everybody else out there, we would highly recommend looking to this Wednesday's episode for more insight there.
Yeah, and besides the idea of active management, on this Wednesday's episode, we're going to like actually propose a bunch of questions you should ask yourself before you get into real estate investing. So there are just a lot of things that you need to ask yourself before you make the plunge. And so, yeah, I think that'll be helpful to Jenny too. Like asking those questions might reveal whether or not that's the next right step for them.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think having 2 or 3 rentals can be an excellent path for folks who are nearing their retirement years, right? The cash flow that a rental property can provide is very convenient, in particular for someone who isn't getting a regular paycheck anymore. It can kind of supplement your Social Security or your other sources of retirement income. It's just important to know that there are other forms of investing where you won't have to be as involved, right? Jenny, I'm all for you becoming a landlord, and it's not as hard as a whole lot of folks would make you believe it is, especially since you're likely going to have a property manager and you're not going to be managing tenants and repairs day to day. But it is important to go into this new venture with eyes wide open, because even still, it's going to take some active work on your part. And if you're not interested in taking on additional work at your age, at 50 years old, then you know you might want to consider something more passive, like selling that property and putting all that money into a simple target date fund. And you mentioned that you weren't really a long-term investor, but at your age, you still need to think like a long-term investor, actually, I would say. And putting at least some of that money, maybe all that money, if you decide that across the ocean landlording just isn't going to work out in the same way, that could be the right move for you. But there are so many variables to figure out as to which one is the right move for you. Just make sure that you keep your options open in this time. Have some conversations with your husband about what you want your lives to look like. And if that is more rental properties, if the first one works out well and you want to do some more of that, that's great. But if you say, that's not for us, now we're sitting on a lot of cash, we do need to have that money invested to avoid, you know, inflation continuing to erode that money. Starting to do some investing, you know, in the market might make sense for you too. But I would say you're on the right path, you're asking the right questions, and you're headed in the right direction. So best of luck to you both as you're making some of these like strategic decisions.
That's right. And Jenny said that she's probably not our typical listener, but we know there's folks out there who are in maybe not the exact boat that she's in, where they're kind of stranded in Europe for the, you know, at the moment, but just folks who are more at that stage of life where they are trying to figure out how to balance their goals of retirement, which are a lot closer than they maybe realize. But either way, regardless of what phase of life you're in, we appreciate all of our listeners out there. Joel, we're kind of transitioning now back to our beer. This episode, you and I enjoyed Coco Frio by Cruz Blanca. This one was donated to the show by Dennis. And specifically, I think, is it Dennis's girlfriend who's there at the brewery?
I think so, yeah.
And this was a tropical lager with pineapple and coconut. It says it right there on the can. Were you picking up pineapple and coconut? What were your thoughts?
I was picking up both. And I don't think I've ever had a tropical lager before.
I don't think I have either.
So it's kind of nice to try a style for the first time. And I would say it's a really good style. It's nice because the beer is more light and refreshing, right? Just kind of an old school lager, but with like a fresh take. And then the coconut and pineapple added like a delicious tropical twist, I would say. So yeah, it was light enough where it wasn't overwhelming, because sometimes I like a good tropical IPA, but sometimes it's just like
too heavy for you.
There's too much going on, and it is too heavy and it's too intense. And this one was like, it really let the tropical notes shine through because it was a lager, and it was just easily drinkable, but also refreshing at the same time. So yeah, I dug this one.
Yeah, this is like one of these late summer porch sipping beers.
Yeah.
Like you and I, we were talking at the beach how there are some beers that we want to have on the beach, specifically Rattlers. But then beers that have a little more backbone, that have a little more complexity, you don't really enjoy those on the beach at all.
Right.
And we would try it occasionally, and it's like, this is a good beer. However, I wish I was further from the ocean while enjoying this.
Well, there's a time and a place for everything,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I feel like this beer would be perfect sitting on a front porch or a back porch. You pick. But I honestly picked up on the coconut notes a little bit, but I felt like instead of saying, what is it, pineapple and coconut, I would have said pineapple and lime. I feel like there's very much a limey element to it. It almost kind of reminded me of a gin and tonic. We poured this beer and it had a lot of effervescence, so it was a really fizzy beer, but they really grounded it and held it down with those pineapple and what I'll call lime notes that I picked up on. I really enjoy this one. Never had a style like this. I agree. Never had something unique like this. But I am so glad that you and I got to enjoy this one on the episode. And I'm actually looking forward to a few more beers from Cruz Blanca as well.
All right, but that's going to do it for this episode. For listeners who want the show notes for this episode, well, you can go to our website at howtomoney.com.
And there's a reason why we end every single episode asking you to leave us a review if you have found this episode helpful. And it's because these reviews help others to find our show. We want other folks to make sure that they're exposed to solid knowledge about their personal finances, because we want them to make smart, wise, sound decisions when it comes to their money. And so we appreciate you partnering with us in that mission. Thank you in advance. Joel, that's going to be it for this episode, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
An October morning in a quiet suburb in a town in Scotland, a man is walking his dog when suddenly shots are fired from a car. The man falls to the ground and the car speeds off. An ordinary residential area, but extraordinary things happen in ordinary places.
The instinct right away was it was a political thing.
We're talking about Russian-trained, high-ranking officer in the Secret Service.
An Assassin Comes to Town, a six-part podcast. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, iHeart listener. We have a confession to make. Both iHeart and this commercial you're listening to right now would probably sound a heck of a lot better on the new Roku Pro Series TV. It's got side-firing speakers that fill your room with sound, Dolby Atmos audio that puts you right in the middle of the entertainment, and the ability to pair seamlessly with your home theater sound systems that already have surround sound and booming bass. If all that sounds too good to be true, it'll sound even better on the new Roku Pro Series. Your hearing isn't better, your TV is.